Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast, premiering Wednesday, October 1st. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Richard Epstein of the Civitas Institute. The information from Iran and the Middle East is fog of war. The New York Times, however, does us the favor of summarizing what has been achieved so far. The attack on Parchin, one of the suspect nuclear weapons program sites, is said to have destroyed the facility. This is a military facility southeast, I believe, of Tehran, outside of the big city. At the same time, the New York Times is using the word decapitated to talk about the attack on the leadership in Iran, the army, the IRGC, nuclear experimentation, and even advisors to the Ayatollah. The Ayatollah himself and his son, who's seen as the successor, are not named as decapitated. Right now, Professor, how do you measure the effectiveness of this attack? We're told that Mr. Trump has said, we'll see you Sunday to continue the negotiation with between the U.S. and Iran. However, there is information that Iran will not attend those talks, those scheduled talks on the suspect nuclear weapons program. How do you see the immediate future, Professor? We have a few minutes.
I think what's going to happen is you're going to see more attacks. One of the things that seems to be very clear is that the Israelis have tremendously reliable intelligence. And I think a lot of it they're going to get from sources inside Iran who are opposed to their own regime. Remember, the Ayatollah is something of a dictator. He's a massively intolerant man. And there are large numbers of Western type people in Iran who would love to see him out. And I think they're all working with Israel. And so my view about this is that this is not just an air attack. It's also a land attack. Somebody inside Iran has very strong intelligence and is supplying it to the Israelis so they can do precision bombing. And one of the things, of course, that you need in this intelligence is to find out when the leaders of the opposition are meeting and then to take them out. The Israelis were able to do that with the second round of leadership in Hamas, and now it turns out they're doing exactly the same thing in Iran. And so what happens is they can't even figure out who's on first, quite literally, with respect to their own activities. And so it's going to be very difficult for them to organize some kind of a response of one kind or another. They don't have much of an air force, and most of the drones they have are slow and awkward. And it turns out they don't know who's going to run them and what. So the retaliation stuff is not there. And what they are doing essentially is overplaying a very weak hand. Their hatred of Israel and to some extent of the United States is so great that they can't figure out what's in their best interest, which is to give up on this war of conquest, to understand that they can't take over the Middle East by proxies, and to reform their government and to start saying we want to establish normal economic relationships so our people get out of all this trouble. But the Ayatollah is not like that. And so he's doubling down on stupidity. I don't know whether this was planned, whether the United States will negotiate and the Israelis say that we'll bomb, giving you a 1-2 punch. But it doesn't matter exactly how it plays out. As far as I can see, the Iranians have no sensible strategy for there to advance except to surrender and to get rid of all of this stuff. The Israelis, I think, really do understand the way this has gone. And John, the other thing to do is to put this into context. Look at the world as of October 6, 2023, right? And see who was there and who was doing what. And now look at the situation and say, oh, my God, what has happened? Hezbollah, not completely neutralized, but largely neutralized. Israeli is occupied part of the area. Assad, he's gone in Syria, and the Israelis have expanded their foothold in the Golan Heights and have neutralized some of the key harbors that the Russians might want to use for their own experimentation. So you do that. Gaza, they basically completely contaminated the first two, or decapitated, first two generations of leadership. And at this particular point, there is now a domestic group, which is being supported by the Israelis, who are basically Palestinians who want to get rid of Hamas as a governing force. If they succeed with that, then you could actually create an enclave, external stuff guarded by Israel, but operated internally by the Palestinians, which will actually be viable. There will be no talk of a two-state solution. You'd be crazy to accept that. And so what's happened is in every relevant area, the forces of the Iranians and their allies are weaker than they were at the beginning of the war. And now, what's the strategy you take? If you're Israel, you don't slow down now and give them a chance to regroup. You just keep piling on until all of these guys are gone. This is not a close case. And how do we know that? Well, you start to see the desperation on the other side. You get Hamas killing Palestinian workers who are trying to distribute aid. And so it's now a war crime, according to Hamas, to take food from the Israelis, which will allow your families to survive. The Iranians have also very serious problems about dislocation. And remember, the Israelis have at least one more weapon up their sleeves that they could easily use. They can neutralize all of the oil and gas facilities and all the refineries and all the harbors which Iran uses. So they can completely lay waste to the country. And my view about it is they're doing it exactly the right way. You keep it going. You don't do it all at one shot. You keep them uncertain as to where you're going to strike next. What you do is you continue to get your administration. And whenever you find somebody who pops up as a real threat, what you have to do is you have to take them out. I mean, for the Israelis, this is a war of survival. And they understand that. And somebody says, well, the terms aren't even. Well, if a war of survival had even terms, then you'd be absolutely freaked out. But at this point, we don't have that particular problem. What we do is we have a problem of management. What do the Israelis do next when they have a wide number of options? And whatever your flaws with Netanyahu as a political leader, his ability to get his military to do the right thing at the right time seems to be quite extraordinary. And before people denounce him or denounce the Israelis, I think they just better look and ask themselves the following question.
30 seconds, Professor, 30 seconds.
Yeah. Was Hamas wise to break the peace treaties on October 6th on the thought that they could then get the rest of the Arab world to attack the Israelis? And the answer is it was a catastrophic miscalculation because they did get the rest of the world, the Arab world, to come in, but they did so in a way which led to their own short-term destruction. And as far as I'm concerned, the Israelis should and will continue to pile on, strategically clever, but nonetheless very insistent.
Professor Richard Epstein, Civitas Institute. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.